Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack.
Welcome to Top Shelf, everyone. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack. I know I've had laryngitis. I'm getting better, but I could not pass up this opportunity with this author. And so she's going to do most of the talking. but I did want to kick off our summer reading event here at Merrick Library. Our signups begin with the whole family on Sunday, June 10th at 1 p.m. So in honor of that, I would like to recommend a book that takes you to the very small town of Petroleum, Montana. Now, residents of Petroleum have experienced a tragedy 25 years ago, and they have yet to recover from that, which brings me to today's guest, Susan Henderson, and her terrific book, The Flicker of Old Dreams. And I'm going to say it again, The Flicker of Old Dreams. Welcome, Susan. Thank you for talking to me and half of my voice.
Thanks for having me when you're not feeling well. And thank you for this beautiful, beautiful library.
Oh, it's great, isn't it? We're very lucky here. So, The Flicker of Old Dreams picks up with the town of Petroleum, and that's Petroleum, Montana, and they're suffering emotionally and economically from a past tragedy, which I mentioned 25 years ago. And we pick up with a former resident who is returning to the town, and his return just tilts the town off its axis. So, I don't want to keep talking, but tell us a little bit more about the book.
Okay, so what inspired the book was, there was just, whether you're watching the news or you're looking at bumper stickers, you're just seeing this growing division between one American and another. And I started becoming alarmed by that. And in particular, I was thinking about my current life in New York versus my family roots in Montana. And it wasn't sitting well with me to not be have a foot in both worlds. And so I wanted to tell a story that got us listening to each other again. And so I decided to concentrate on a town I knew from my childhood of 180 people.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
It's where my father's from. It's where I used to go every summer. And I wanted to tell a story that opened up a dialogue between those who fear change and those who desire change, where you can hear both people and respect both people. And so I decided to tell about the death of this small town in America using a mortician as the narrator. And so the whole book has kind of a 6 feet under vibe to it.
Well, it does and it doesn't. And I'm sure many of the questions that you do get is, why make Mary our main character, whom I adore, I love her, why make her a mortician? But as you read the book, the reader realizes that her profession is incidental. Mm-hmm. It is and it isn't. It's not. You get so used to what she's doing as a job,
yeah.
You forget that that's, you know, it gives you pause when you first read it, but then you're like, oh my goodness, this is really interesting. What made you go with mortician?
So I went to this town and stayed there for a month to work on the book. Sorry, I'm not used to talking into a microphone. And while I was there, And even more so when I got back to New York and started looking at my pictures from there, which I'll show you sometime, I realized I was witnessing the death of a town, death of industries, death of a way of life. So as I was brainstorming who could narrate the story, at some point I asked myself, like, whoa, what if someone who ran a funeral home was our narrator, because she would not be afraid to look at death and see it for what it was, and yet she could be tender with the process of dying and death and give dignity to the life that had been lived. And so once I had that idea, I was like, okay, now I have a book.
So did you go to the town in Montana mm-hmm. that your dad was from.
Yeah.
Did you go there with this idea in mind, or was it something you were waiting to be inspired by?
I just knew that all the tension that was in the air, I knew I would find some story related to that in this town. But I always go with an open mind about what I'm going to write about, because whenever I do have a strong idea, it changes.
Now,
anyway.
when you got there,
yeah.
So, did they look at you as like a New Yorker or a city person? How did that work? I mean, 180 people, you're going to stand out.
Yeah, and when I say 180 people, you only see maybe 9 of them at a time. So for people who don't know the book, it's a town. It's like dirt roads. There's no police presence. There's no fire department. There's no cell phone tower. You're just kind of there. So everyone knew I was the person that didn't live in
the
town. No, oh my God, no.
So no real services per se.
They're about 2 hours away. So these are really self-sufficient people, physically different than me. It's like if you looked at our hands, I had these kind of like embarrassingly soft hands. It made me feel very
urban.
Yeah, and you know, people that just they work outside, their skin was just, you know, the weather's been beating them up all these years. So I basically just kind of went and listened, hitchhiked. I said yes to anyone.
Goodness. Please don't hitchhike.
I know. Don't.
Susan, don't do that again. Please.
I was just trying to say yes to the whole experience, but I probably, next time I won't say my yeses. So I just, if someone invited me to their house, I said yes. If someone said, do you want to watch a calf tacky? Yes.
My goodness. And did they know you had history with the town?
Yes, because my grandma was the principal of the school there.
My
so
goodness.
Everybody knew and revered my grandma.
My goodness.
And so that was always my in. My grandpa was a little bit of a rascally character. So, you know, if you knew my grandpa, maybe he'd stolen something from me or whatever. But if you knew my grandma. And so when I was a kid and I went to this town, because when I went there for research, it was the only time I'd ever been by myself. But when I went as a kid, we used to go to this town, and we had a family cemetery a little ways outside of the town. And we would always make a day-long trek out there. So from the town of 180 people, you go towards nowhere. And at some point, you see this little barbed wire fence and some little kind of crickety plots and license plates and whatever people
So those
use.
Were the markers.
Yeah.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah, it was just kind of like scrap metal with names scratched into them. And we would go, and if there was someone to bury, we would just dig a hole. We would go with our shovels and our shotguns. And if there was no service, which is most of the time, we would dig up the sagebrush because that's where all the rattlesnakes hid. And so and it would just kind of take over the cemetery. So at the end of the day, there would be like these dead rattlers hanging over
goodness.
The barbed wire. And then the dads would cut the rattles off for us. We'd put them in our pockets and stuff. So those are the people that I was writing about. And when I went there by myself, it was just listening, and I actually had writer's block the whole time I was there. So the only thing I wrote about when I was there was the wind, because I, honest to God, I thought I was gonna go insane from how loud and constant the wind was. Like you were just kind of bracing against
it. In the book, the wind is almost a character.
Yes.
The landscape is a character.
Yeah.
All of the entire environment mm-hmm. is a character. The people of Petroleum, would you say, like, how many people are in the town?
They're about the
same, 180
yeah,
people, 200
yeah.
people.
It's going down now, but yeah.
Right, well, right. You have to read the book to find out. But I also noticed that as I was reading this, I'm a very big Ken Harrah fan. Mm-hmm. And that's Harrah. Again, I know I sound terrible. H-A-R-U-F, Ken Harrah. And he has a Plain Song trilogy. Mm-hmm. And as I was reading Flicker of Old Dreams, I kept thinking this may have been another family in that town. Mm-hmm. It had the same tone, the same feel. The people, the weather, the townspeople, knowing very much everybody else's business. And that's one of the reasons I think I just fell in love with it, because I loved the town. Mm-hmm. It's the town itself is a character in the book. It yeah. really is. Yeah. When you were meeting these people and they were telling you, the residents of your town, and they were telling you did they tell you stories that, holy cow, you know, were sort of shocking, or, and were you able to use any of that in this material?
First, I just want to say Plain Song is one of my favorite books of all time, so even just have that book mentioned in the same breath as mine is just an honor.
Deservedly so.
We're all sad that there's no more of his books to read, so. I recorded a lot of people, and I listened, and then, you know, you add fiction, because I did want to kind of wrestle with this kind of two Americas in the story, so some of that was what I was bringing to it, but I tried to capture, for example, if you're used to measuring someone's worth or their success in life with the degree they earned in school, in college, or a salary or something, it was, I think, listening to the people there, I was really struck by how knowledgeable you have to be to live that far away from everything.
I mean, it's incredible.
So you would meet, like, I was riding around with this grandma who was just, like, flying over the hills and stuff, and every time she got to a cattle guard, she had to, like, take the big step out of the truck and open up the gate and then get back out and close it. And when I was a kid, this is about my dad, and I grew up outside of D.C., so we were the only members of the family that left Montana. But this was an example of what someone from that town would do. So there was this one time where he cut himself, and he just stopped what he did, went down in the basement, got some fishing line, sewed it, and then went back to work. And that's absolutely the mindset of this town. They know how to get stuff done. They know it takes all day to get to the hospital no one's going to come and fix your car, so you just have to know how to do all those things yourself. So I just ended up having a lot of respect for the self-sufficiency and I've always considered myself kind of a tough, you know, workhorse type. And then when I'm there, I was like, no, me with my little soft hands. So I was trying to capture their story, but I was also trying to, I wanted the reader, or at least me, because at first you write because you're trying to work something out usually. And I wanted to give voice to the grief of seeing a life that you loved slip away, seeing an industry that had defined your, you know, was your identity, slip away. And also, I wanted to have a voice of sometimes when you live in a town with limited choices of what you can be, and a very, very particular sense of tradition, sometimes those traditions don't speak to you, and sometimes you've felt constrained by your choices. So I wanted to just kind of put those two voices in conflict and see if by the end of it, maybe you could respect each one a little bit more, hear each one, you know, a little bit more.
I mean, it's really interesting when Robert comes home and the ripple effect for the rest of the town. And Mary, this isn't a spoiler, folks, don't worry. Mary realizes where he's from, where he's coming home to, because he is returning home. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as if she's peering out a window.
Yeah.
And she sees this very distant place that he's now settled.
Yeah.
And there's a... I just got the chills.
Me too. It's like, you should be a book publicist.
And I just felt she's gotten a taste of this now. Mm-hmm. It seems so far away. And you say it in a couple of paragraphs, and it's so simply worded, and if it gave you and I the goosebumps with my retelling, could you imagine if you're reading it? It's very, it's a visceral thing. that Mary, not only does she see Robert and these exchanges between them occur, but she also, it's almost like putting on eyeglasses mm-hmm. when you're reading something and you need readers. I need readers.
Yeah.
And then I put the readers on. I'm like, oh, there's the word. There are the words.
Yeah.
It was like she puts on readers when he comes home.
Right. Or like you didn't realize how much mud had accumulated on your car windshield until you cleaned it off and you're like, wait a minute, I'm seeing something completely different out the window.
And now. I loved Robert's mother, Doris.
Yeah.
She was great.
Yeah.
She was really great. So we talked about, it reminded me of
Sorry, your voice is so adorable.
Oh.
I totally enjoy that.
Everyone's just going to laugh at me. Podcast classes are going to say, this is what you should not do. And what a good sport is Susan Henderson. I also thought of Jane Smiley's 1,000 Acres because you've got these townspeople in both Plain Song, in Flicker of Old Dreams, and in 1,000 Acres, where even though you have a few standout people, the cast is an ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ensemble piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that you find that very, very often, or at least in a way that makes me want to know, well, what's going on in that house?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a situation that the dad is in
mm-hmm.
that's a slow reveal. And I was, my goodness, what's happening there?
Yeah.
And I found myself after reading it, looking for extra chapters on the other people.
Aww.
Because I wanted to know what really happened. I don't want to say too much. What really happened with Robert
mm-hmm.
and what really happened with the dad and his friend, his lady friend. It left me wanting more.
Maybe that's your book to write.
I could hardly, I can't even speak. How am I going to write?
It's easier than speaking.
Well, I doubt it. I doubt that. The reader is also really, as we mentioned earlier, on those windy, windy days, the miserably cold weather, it seems like they just can't, Mary can't get warm enough.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stay out of the wind.
Yeah.
When you mentioned before that it was that loud.
Yeah.
How did you dress appropriately? Like, how did you?
Well, it was funny because I went there. I wanted to set a book in winter because I love writing about blizzards and stuff. So,
well, on Long Island, we have some experience.
We do. So, when my dad found out I wanted to go there for winter, he's like, "No, you're not strong enough."
He said that.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And he's not someone who puts me down. He's always like, you can do it and stuff. So I was like, oh. And he said, don't go during hunting season because you don't know who's in town. Those are
right.
visitors, so
right.
it could be anybody.
Right.
So I went in April. It still snowed. So I felt silly, I brought my hiking boots and my flannel shirts and my jean jacket and stuff.
You had the L.L. Bean catalog.
Yeah.
We're outfitted.
But it was, I stayed in this very, very teeny hotel room that had no TV, no phone, no internet access, no cell phone coverage in the whole town. So at night, the wind would just crash against the walls, or sometimes you'd hear this like, woo, you know, and you know there's an animal right outside your door, and you know the wind, it sounds like it's going to break the window, and you can't call out, so you were just like stuck. So as soon as the sun went down, I was just like in this little room with the walls crashing and this like the sound of the wind and then the sound of wild animals. And I was like, I could really, really go insane.
Yeah, it's
in this room. And people used to, probably the number one question I was asked in this town was, are you scared to live in New York? And I was like, no.
Not comparatively speaking.
No. So it's just a different mindset.
Are you scared to live in New York?
Yeah.
And you're telling me about Montana right now, and I'm getting nervous.
Yeah.
Thinking I don't want a big sky country. It's going to be beautiful, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's beautiful, but this particular place, this is pretty rough
what
country. It's more like the Badlands. You know, it's more like South Dakota Badlands.
Right, right. So I'm curious, which is completely off topic, but how did the How did they set up this homestead? How did these people arrive there? What was the industry? Was it cattle industry?
Uh-huh. So
not petroleum.
Yeah. Originally, so my dad lived in this town of Winnet from the time he was six on. But before that, he lived in a place called Makeha that no longer exists. That was, I think it was seven people who lived there. And there's a story my uncle told me just when I was out in Montana in February. And he said he's the middle brother was telling the story. There's three brothers. And the middle brother and my dad, the oldest brother, who was six, they were playing outside and playing over by the creek. So they're playing unsupervised, age six. One fell in the creek, had trouble getting out, finally got out, was all wet. And then because they were so cold and apparently they had like an hour hike to get back to the house. So the little brothers, the oldest one being, you know, they moved away when they were six, so he couldn't have been older than six. And they lit a fire, took their clothes off, dried them over the fire, and then walked home. Because you just do.
What else can you do?
Because you're not going to survive if you don't have that thought process. So I was always like I was the only girl in my family, you know, including all the cousins. And I just felt totally helpless out there. You know, it's like if something's wrong, I just call for help.
Right. Right.
if my car breaks down, I just call AAA. But you just have to do it yourself.
Yeah,
out there,
I can't.
Or you've got to leave.
And it's that's a great question.
Yeah.
Are you afraid to live in New York? Did they have, like, what were their bigger questions? Is it really busy? Did they have any specific New York City questions?
Well, I think, and part of what made it into the book, because the book is only set in that little
Correct,
town, but
right.
But I did put the TV on every now and then just to show how much they don't identify with what they see on TV.
No, not at all.
Because I felt like the questions felt peculiar, and you realize a lot of the conflicts we have, whether it's political or just like legislation or something, you realize that what you might want to fight for in one city doesn't have anything to do with No. someone else's city. And so it is a complicated thing. Our country, where we try to have a rule that covers everybody, and yet there are people that are living just very, very different
Very
lives.
Different.
So I would say that the things that they asked me about were just kind of, they were peculiar because of their idea of, you know, that I might get clubbed over the head if I walk down the street, or that a crowd might be something to be afraid of rather than almost a sense of safety that, you know, if something's wrong.
Meanwhile, you're in your hotel room thinking, oh my God, there's a fox or a coyote, whatever's
yeah.
out there. Right, right on the other side of the door.
Right, and if I open my door, it's just me and
which place. Doesn't even get to the human element of what could be lurking outside your door.
Exactly.
Okay, so I don't want to harsh the celebration of this book, which I encourage everyone to read, and I'm thrilled that it's kicking off our summer reading program here. Uh-huh. I recommend it highly. I know this is the question all writers hate. Do you have anything that you're working on or thinking about or anything in the back of your mind?
I do. And first of all, I'm going to just say thank you so much for being so supportive of this book.
You're welcome.
Because word of mouth is every single thing to the life of a book. And so I always tell people, doesn't matter if it's my book, or anytime you love a book, talk about it. Post about it, post pictures about it. And it doesn't even matter if you give it away to a neighbor for free, as long as you guys are talking about
right.
it.
Yeah. Typically, at the Merrick Library, we have an enormous readers advisory staff.
Uh-huh.
We are all big readers,
yeah.
which kind of sounds silly, but and along with all of the other functions that we have to do to keep the library running mm-hmm. and perfect and wonderful, we all are big readers. Mm-hmm. And when we get a book, this one became an instant staff pick.
Aww.
So I read it and said,
Thank
all right,
so
I'm making this. And then we all talk up the books
uh-huh.
In some way.
Yeah,
we talk about it to
so
patrons.
Much.
We talk about it to our neighbors.
Yeah.
So reader's advisory in a library function is like my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just amazing. And we have some really good people, not just here at Merrick Library, but all the other libraries, really good, strong reader, passionate readers out there. So you're in good hands.
Oh, but to answer your question, yes. So so I live in Kings Park, and I live near, very near the old abandoned asylum that used to hold 10,000 patients.
Is that Pilgrim State?
Kings Park.
Oh, my goodness.
Kings Park psych. So Pilgrim is one town over
from
us.
Right, okay.
It used to employ most of the town and used to have, 10,000 patients at its peak. And then when it closed, the building is just kind of like this great big looming abandoned building with vines growing over it.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
All the windows are broken. And they closed all the doors with like these big metal things. And there's like 10 million ways into this hospital. And if you go there at night, you'll just see like flashlights because all the teenagers are in there. So I know I'm going to set the book there. And right.
Please don't do a site visit unless you go with somebody.
Okay
please. this reckless spirit of hitchhiking.
I'm going to hitchhike there and then go.
and then I'm going to have to come find you.
Yeah. So right now, I'm basically anyone who graffitis it, anyone who used to work there, anyone who used to be a patient there, I'm talking to all of them. I've just got the name and the number of the person who was the locksmith there.
Oh my
and
goodness.
I know that's going to be a character in the book because I feel like the person with the keys holds a lot of power. In
and information.
Case. Yes. So I'm...
Oh, my goodness.
So all I know is that it's going to be there somewhere, and I never quite know what I'm... I try to keep my mind open to hearing whatever story I didn't know existed, so I'm just kind of I'm on my listening tour right now.
Oh my goodness, I'm on the edge of my seat with that. One last thing before you go.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me, what are you reading? What have you read recently that you've mm-hmm. loved? Anything that you sort of are an evangelist for?
Oh, let me see. So one book I read pretty recently that I loved, Roxane Gay's Hunger.
Oh my goodness.
Is a memoir of living in an obese body. And what I love most is everyone's so friendly here.
Oh. Our director just walked by and waved through the windows.
She opens the book by saying, this is not going to be one of those stories we all hear about, now I live in skinny jeans and this is how I got everything together and got rid of that old self. It's about, this is the body I live in. This is the experience of being a woman, a black woman, an obese woman in America today. And it is a beautiful, fierce, honest portrayal, and I really love it. And then the other one I've been sort of an evangelist for lately is Zora Neale Hurston's Barracoon.
Oh my goodness.
So she's one of my favorite authors, but I've only known her as a novelist. So she's been dead for years, and this book was unearthed, and it's her interview with the last living American slave, and it's really interesting. And there are some wrinkles in the story of slavery that I didn't know until this book, and so
there's been some buzz on this because uh-huh. I've read it recently, but I don't know where it's escaping me now.
Mm-hmm.
But I will look into that.
Yeah.
And Hunger is just it blows you away. It's just unbelievable. It's very important. It's mm-hmm. everyone should read it. Again, another instant staff pick.
Yeah.
So I love that also. So thank you, Susan. For not laughing at me.
I laughed a little bit, but it was with love.
You have to. Like I said, this will be the lesson plan in class, what not to do when you have a podcast. But I didn't want to pass up the opportunity to really just go crazy and tell people that they have to read this book. I just loved it.
Can I go crazy for just one second?
Yes, of course.
I am so crazy about librarians.
Oh.
And I just wanted to say that when I was a weird little kid getting in trouble, librarians found me and where no one else kind of knew how to reach me, they would just put a book into my hands that was the right book at the right time. And those stories and those women that I didn't even know their names, but they saved my life, and I am a writer because of those moments. So I just want to give some library love.
I would give you a hug, but the wire from my headphones will fall, knock the whole thing out. That's a great story. Thank you so much for saying that. We're appreciative. Well, folks, that's all the time we have today. And I would keep her here longer, but I'm going to need a throat lozenge. Thank you, Susan Henderson, for joining us. It was my pleasure. It will be the reader's pleasure to read The Flicker of Old Dreams. Please reserve your book today. Thank you again so much, Susan. And you know where to find us. We're on all, wherever you can find podcasts. Check out our website, merricklibrary.org. Special thanks to our director, Ellen Firer, and the board for making this podcast happen. And hopefully they won't be too cross with me for sounding like this. And that's all for today. You guys know where to find us. Keep us always on your top shelf.